So welcome to everyone to the 19th telelearning session that's being sponsored by the Canadian Social Economy Hub. We're going to ask that participants and presenters alike please mute your phones now by pressing star 6 on your keypad to allow everyone to clearly hear the presentations this morning. I'll just take a moment if people want to press pound 6 now, or star 6, sorry, it's star 6 to mute and unmute. That will help reduce some of the background noise and allow people in Ontario or the Eastern Time Zone to eat their lunch without worrying about the noise. And if you wish to speak later on, you can unmute your line at any time by dialing star 6 again. So my name is Michael Toy. I'm the Executive Director of the Canadian Community Economic Development Network. Canadian CED Network is a national member-led nonprofit. Our members across the country work on community-driven solutions to local and global challenges like poverty, homelessness, unemployment, and climate change. SEDNET, as it's commonly known, is active in research, demonstration of CED and social economy approaches, policy outreach, peer learning, and practitioner development. We try to support our members to those activities in their innovative work to create healthy and sustainable communities. So part of SEDNET's activities, I mentioned research above, is our involvement as a co-lead along with the University of Victoria in the Canadian Social Economy Hub. The Hub is a national social economy research program that involves practitioner organizations and universities from across Canada. There's a national center that's located in Victoria that draws on and supports the work of six regional research centers that are spread out across the country. And funding from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council over the last 5 years that has supported this research and allowed the research to be carried out to better understand how the social economy could be more effectively applied. And community organizations, civil society, community developers, and researchers can collaborate to empower groups and communities to meet their social and economic needs. So I might just ask people who have just joined the call to please put your phones on mute by pressing star 6, and that helps reduce some background noise and allows everyone to hear the presentations clearly. So just a bit more about the Hub. One of the Hub's main focus areas is called knowledge mobilization. And that means trying to take the valuable research being generated by the community university partnerships across the country and put it in a form that can be useful and accessible to a wide audience, making sure it gets into the hands of people that can use it, because the knowledge is only as valuable as the use we can make of it. So to do that, the Hub undertakes a number of activities. You can find many of these resources on the website, socialeconomyhub.ca, including newsletters, thematic briefs, publications, and what we're doing now, such as telelearning sessions. The objectives of the telelearning sessions are to familiarize stakeholders with the research, to provide a forum for practitioners, researchers, and others to communicate, to engage practitioners in discussions on the research, and to help people use the research to impact public policy and practice. So that's the preamble. I'll just do a couple points of logistical points, and then we'll get to the actual presentations. I should mention that the call is being recorded. It's to be posted to the Hub website as an MP3 file, so it'll be a resource for people who couldn't join us today, or for all of us to download as, to keep as a reference and listen again. The session today is scheduled to last for an hour, so we'll have a little less half of the time to start with our presentations, and then a little over half an hour for questions and discussion afterwards. We're currently running a chat room with this session in order to enhance everyone's ability to interact with other call participants and presenters. If you have access to a computer and an internet connection during the call, then you can visit the link that was included in the email that Ashley sent out, I believe, yesterday with the dial-in information. On that email, you can click on a link. It'll take you to a website called chatsy.com. And there, at any time, you can, during the session, you can use the chat room to direct questions and comments to fellow session participants. You can also formulate questions for presenters, but I'd ask if you do it, then please preface the question with a big couple of asterisks and big question in uppercase letters to make sure I catch it. I'll be collecting questions as they go through their presentations, and we'll start the discussion period with some of those questions from the chat room. If you're not in front of a computer, though, don't worry. We'll still open the floor to questions from across the country. So after some initial questions from the chat room, I'll be inviting participants to ask questions directly on the phone. So today's telelearning session, the Hub's 19th, we're taking a moment to step back to look at how far the social economy has come, where we're at now, and what the possibilities are for the future. Personally, I was very happy when Ashley and Ian invited me to moderate this session because I love the bird's eye view of the history and the history and progress of how things are evolving. And I'm especially pleased to be moderating a session with our two distinguished presenters, two of the most knowledgeable people in the country on the topic. So I'm looking forward to the presentations and the discussion. With that, I'm going to introduce first Ian McPherson, who's going to give our first presentation. Ian is the co-director and principal investigator for the Canadian Social Economy Hub. He was a founder of the British Columbia Institute for Cooperative Studies at the University of Victoria. He's been at the UVic, University of Victoria, since 1976, serving as chair of the history department from 81 to 89, and then dean as humanities from 1992 to 2000. So I'll pass it over to you, Ian, to start us off, and then I'll introduce Jean-Marc at his presentation.
Actually, I believe Jean-Marc was going to go first.
Is that right?
I believe so, yes.
My apologies.
No, that's no problem. I think it's just better if he did.
Okay. So
is that okay
Jean-Marc?
With you? Okay.
Okay, so no problem. I can start.
Well, let me introduce you, Jean-Marc.
Okay.
He's a professor of sociology at the Université du Québec à Montréal, UQAM, in Montreal, and co-director of the Social Economy Community University Research Alliance in Quebec. A long history working on the social economy and partnering in the development of the social economy in Quebec. So welcome, Jean-Marc.
Merci, Mike. So my presentation will just follow three elements. The first one is try to grab a part of the heritage of the social economy. The second element will be around the where we are now, especially in Quebec. And the third one, of course, is the future. What kind of future can we expect if we work with a threatened social economy? So to support the presentation, I already send information like a PowerPoint presentation with the time kind of line from the antiquity to now, but with emphasis on the 19th century and also some information about the development of social economy in Quebec with a different kind of authors. Then I put two papers, one from Franck Moulard, which is a guy working in Europe, and he made a very interesting paper on social economy in the continent. And then, of course, a very interesting paper from Marguerite Mendel that highlights the history and makes kind of the situation now about the social economy. So my first point was related to the heritage. What is interesting when we look at the history is that we can go back far in time to see the seed of the social economy emerging. It brings back us to the antiquity time with the Greeks, the Roman people, and of course the Egyptians. And what we had at the time was more on the side of the mutualization. So people went with some kind of very simple organization to be able to help one and the other in case of a disaster, for example, a fire, your house burned, then you had people that help you to rebuild the house. It was kind of the first step of the insurance, we can say, technology. And then in Egypt, you had the first union that were set up when we had the construction of the pyramids. Later on, in the Middle Age, you had a new kind of association that started, that was cooperation and the co-op. The co-op movement starts very simply around the 11th, 12th centuries in Europe, and it grows slowly toward the beginning of the 19th century. And with the 19th century, you had a kind of explosion of the social economy. Of course, the modernity was very important with that loosening, and the two kind of organizations that developed was, of course, the co-op sector with the consumption option very strong, and of course the financial one, and the not-for-profit organization. You had a lot of different kind of not-for-profit organization that was set up to try to help people fight poverty. It was a very difficult period at the time. Then in the 20th century, you had a kind of institutionalization of the co-op sector. It became very strong everywhere in Canada. You had very interesting experiments in Nova Scotia with the Antigonish movement. Of course, in Quebec, the Desjardins movement. But also, there was a lot of development in the fisheries, in the agriculture, in the housing. Students co-op set up in 1940. So it was a very strong movement, the co-op movement, in the period between, especially in Quebec, between 1930s and 1960s. With the 60s, you had a new phenomena, is the a lot of organizations set up in the not-for-profit sectors, and especially in the beginning of the 70s, some of them explored the way of developing economic goals with social goals. So you had a new setup, a new kind of social economy that was emerging, and the recognition of that new trend was possible in Quebec with the big summit in 1996, where you had a firm recognition of the new social economy. And of course, you had the creation of the Chantier de l'économie sociale and different other organizations to help the promotion of that economy, like Le Réseau d'investissement social du Québec or the Comité sectoriel de la main-d'œuvre en économie sociale et l'action communautaire. Of course, on the research side, you had the CURA on social economy that was set up in 2000 and that was able to work for 10 years from 2000 to 2010. So that gives you a kind of a glimpse of the heritage that we are working with, an heritage that is focused on a new way of doing economics with a new kind of values. And I will let Ian talk about the values. I won't take time to develop on that theme. Actually, we have a kind of defi or... how do you say defeat, Michael?
A challenge?
A challenge, thanks. We have a challenge that is divided maybe in two parts. The first one is to have the social economy that will be recognized all around the country, around a kind of the same kind of umbrella, the one name, and that is very difficult. We have been trying to work around that challenge for 5 years, and I think with the summit that is arriving in the beginning, at the end of the month of May and beginning of June in Ottawa, bringing together a lot of movements around social economy and community development organizations, co-op sectors, and so on, we will have the possibility to work on the recognition of a kind of more inclusive economy that is called maybe social economy or citizen economy. There's different labels going on. But there's a kind of challenge around a common umbrella for Canada around that kind of economy. The other one is to strengthen the capacity of the social economy to take its place inside the economy by evolving in new sectors, be able to expand and have more and more people around that kind of economy with good salaries and very interesting kind of production with goals that will go either on the social side, economic side, but of course on the environmental side. That might be the third challenge actually of the social economy, is to be able to develop a very interesting proposal of combination of goals between social, economic, and environmental. Not easy to do so, but I think we have the capacity, the ingenuity, and the will to go in that direction. The third aspect of my presentation is the future. What kind of future can we expect? It's a very difficult question because I have been studying social economy for almost 3 decades now, and we are always astonished by the capacity of innovation that we can see inside that sector. But even if we are innovative, it's very, very difficult to be fully recognized by the other actors of the society. So I had a reflection saying maybe one of the problems is that we don't have a kind of matrix around us, a cultural matrix that is not helpful for the development of the social economy. We still are in a very liberal economic utopian world. So what we need maybe is to make a kind of big transformation, a kind of cultural revolution, to be able to go in a way that we will have a kind of a new utopia that will make feasible a social economy that will be recognized in every sectors of the society. So maybe that's the challenge that we have, is to also work on the cultural aspect of the development of the cultural matrix that regulates society. At the end of the 18th century, we had a big revolution in Europe and the transformation of the cultural setting from a pre-modern one to a modern one. Maybe that's what we need now. We need a kind of cultural revolution that will bring a kind of, Mike, comment on peut dire, une espèce d'éveil, de réveil.
I always think of Kapil Annie as a transformation, but an awakening, maybe.
Okay, an awakening, that's a good one. So maybe that's what we need, a kind of awakening to be able to collectively agree, to have a new consensus, maybe a new social contract at the level of the world, of the planet, to go in a direction that will make feasible a social economy or citizen economy, or if we can say a more inclusive economy, not the one that will bring people on one side with power, with wealth, and on the other side with poverty and alienation. So we need to have a kind of setting that will work against the process of separation, of alienation, of exclusion. And the social economy is a very interesting tool to go in that direction. Of course, it implies more than the social economy. It implies also a new political agenda. But we have to work on those different dimensions, political, economical, and social, to be able to design the future in a way that will be very interesting for everybody. So that's what I have to say in about 10 minutes.
I apologize, John. There's a huge amount of feedback and typing and kind of rustling. I don't know if that's possible, that someone's unmuted or...
Great. So, yeah, if we can just ask everyone again to ensure that they have their phones on mute by pressing *6. And it's actually the same *6 to unmute as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It might actually be coming from your end. I'm not sure.
Oh, I had mine on mute.
Oh, really? Okay. I hear typing and rustling around.
Okay. So, That's great. Thank you. That's a tall order in 10 minutes, Jean-Marc, to give us that review and vision into the future. But I think it's a challenge for all of us and a very powerful synthesis of where we're coming from and where we want to go. And a great introduction or segue into Ian's presentation. I gave the overview or the introduction earlier, but I'll repeat that the co-director and principal investigator for the Canadian Social Economy Hub, founder of the BC Institute for Cooperative Studies, chair of the Department of History at UVic, and Dean of Humanities as well. We'll pass it over to you, Ian, for your perspective on the long view of the social economy.
Thank you very much, Mike. First of all, there are three readings that I sent in. I just want to mention one of them, which has the odd title of Circles, Not a Pyramid. I unintentionally sent in an early draft, which didn't have the last 10 pages. So you're probably, some of you are probably wondering how it all turned out, but you can find out now if you go on. Now, what we've had this morning is a sociologist doing a wonderful job as an historian, and probably an historian who's attempting a very low-level kind of sociology. So who says we aren't interdisciplinary? As Jean-Marc has pointed out, the social economy is an old concept. He even took it back farther than I've heard recently, so that's really very interesting. And in English, in Canada, we have a difference between Quebec and the rest of Canada. It's a well-established concept in Quebec with lots of vigorous debates. And I think in Quebec we find this situation because of its closer associations with France and some European countries, the nature of its elite structures, and the power of nationalist sentiment. But in contrast, the social economy has relatively little traction in English-speaking Canada, though I strongly believe there are signs that this situation may be changing. And I think the meeting in Ottawa this spring is going to be a very good indication of that. But I want to address that situation, and although I may take a while to get around to the long view, I think it involves the long view. I think there are a few challenges that we've got to face right at the start, and one of them you might relate to Kelly McPartland's comments in the National Post on March the 23rd, when basically he said the concept of the social economy is murky and incomprehensible. Well, that's nonsense. And it's nonsense on at least two levels. First, the idea can largely be understood by examining its main institutional forms, associations, nonprofits, cooperatives, mutuals, all of which are very well established in our legal and government systems, all of which have long histories in our country. And I don't think that kind of institutional approach creates any more complications than one would find if one were to try to understand the mainstream market economy in the traditional way. It becomes very complex. The way in which our stock markets, anyone want to explain derivatives in 30 seconds, and the way in which international companies function, none of these are simple. And that's fine, but don't charge that the social economy is particularly complex. Second, those who pretend the social economy cannot be readily understood, I believe, are simply raising a red herring which seeks to situate the social economy within the contested and ritualized ideological debates of the last 2.5 centuries. And in fact, what it does is avoid an open discussion about how we as a society can best address some of our most basic and consistent problems by using the full resources of our communities most effectively. So that's one thing, and I don't take that whole issue seriously, except that it's used so commonly just in discussion, and it angers me. A more substantial and interesting challenge is the assertion that private enterprise will eventually resolve most of the social and economic issues that confront humankind. All that is necessary is a more perfect market to turn needs into business opportunities, and that they to be applauded, and I mean that genuinely and sincerely, to be applauded tendencies towards social entrepreneurship can resolve most of our social problems. Well, that's widely believed, I think, by many people in our society. It underlies a lot of opposition to social economy, and is buttressed by research, often, in a sense, free through many, many universities and undertaken in many places. Despite that research, and while acknowledging the positive contributions of market economy, as so that's generally understood, and that's the point, by the way, I respectively suggest that it is nevertheless a dubious contention, especially when taken to an extreme. The unfettered market has not distributed resources in a demonstrably fair manner. It has tolerated exploitative practices far away, even more than closer to home. It seldom takes into account all of the costs, and it has contributed to class warfare and widening social cleavages, declining communities, and cyclical depressions. It's a very mixed balance sheet. All of this, of course, is in fact to enter into some of the great debates of the last 200 years, if not longer. In doing so, though, it is not to raise all the old arguments, cliches, and posturings, but rather to suggest that considerations of the social economy belong in discussions of big issues. It needs, however, to be considered on its own terms, and not just as adjunct arguments for other ideological systems, for example, as an occasional tool for various kinds of socialism, or as a safety valve for escalating markets, one that will pick up the pieces of social problems. I don't agree with either perspective. I think it can be seen as a force on its own, which in keeping with its values, uses, community power, different organizing principles, and its own forms of knowledge, can contribute economically and enhance socially. By the way, the notes for this talk are going to be on the chat line. I place particular emphasis on what the social economy can contribute, specifically the social capital it creates, its alternative forms of governance, which look awfully good in recent days, its distribution of surplus incomes, its fair rewarding of capital and labor, and its deep commitments to social accountability. All of these gifts are particularly important in a world facing enormous pressures that will not decrease. I consequently have great difficulty in understanding why, in this age of diminishing resources and accumulating problems, we don't seize every opportunity to build and engage this kind of power. Do we really have that choice? Now, another serious challenge is to understand why we should think about the social economy as an entity. And I want to list a few reasons, but I can't go into detail. I don't have time. We can discuss them, or we can add to them and think about them some more. But they include considerable conformity in values across the social economy, the centrality of individual and community wellness, the possibilities of learning from each other, my heavens, what a thought, possibilities for expanding influence, educational institutions, government policy, public debates, funding organizations, not other NGOs, the whole range. We can aim at reducing duplicated efforts if we thought about a social economy, and I think we waste a lot of energy and time and money in duplicated efforts. Present clearer and more options for communities, and I think it's part of a long and deep historical pattern. Now, there are others, but I want to pause at that one because it's relevant for today's session. I would argue that what many of us would call the social economy today is not new at all, but is rather the current manifestation of long-standing and important, diverse, yet associated efforts by English Canadians to develop stronger, more equitable social relationships and to pursue economic opportunities, that's important, through community-based activism. The term social economy may seem new in our context, but its realities and many of its practices stretch well back into the 19th century in Canada. So I think it refers to a pattern that runs deep in our history and that continues to serve Canada well, though it could serve it better. And a simple way to understanding it is simply to say that it refers to the community-based approaches used by people to help themselves and better their communities, as long as one realizes that there are many types of communities and not those just defined by geography. Now, we can join with Europeans in tracing it back to industrialization, urbanization, and rural transformation of the late 18th and particularly 19th century. But there are certain aspects of Canadian life, in the past particularly, that we need to emphasize. The importance of ethnic and national identities, our versions of class structures, the settlement process, the mining and lumbering frontiers, religious beliefs and sentiments, population shifts, racism, etc. It's actually a long list. The picture has always been, will always be, multifaceted. So, when I look at the history of such efforts in English Canada, a few observations. First, First, it's a consequential history in size, continuity, and effectiveness. It is a substantial part of Canada's economic and social life. It is a remarkably diverse and a continuously more diverse sector. John Mark mentioned that. Many elements of the social economy compete effectively and well within the mainstream economy. It's not something that should be just put over on the side, for like in a greenhouse. The size of Canada and its regional, provincial, national differences profoundly affect how the social economy is perceived. There is no one-size-fits-all, and we should neither expect nor want one. Fifth, for understandable but in some ways regrettable reasons, the institutions of what we call the social economy have been defined largely by the state in light of the constant reshuffling of organizational forms over the last 150 years. It is fascinating to understand how we've come as a society and other nearby societies have come to terms with institutionalization of that kind. Sixth, while there are examples of remarkable accomplishments, the management and governance of such organization is not as well studied or as well understood as it deserves to be. Its research base is spasmodic, weakly integrated, and poorly sustained. It represents an underused and potentially very important contributor to Canada's economic stability and social well-being. It is a sector that is not as integrated as it could and should be. I could add substantially to this list, but I'll end with that point, even though I am risking ending on a downer. When Cassius strove to enlist Brutus to head off what was correctly perceived as a great threat to the Republic, he said, "Men sometimes are masters of their fate. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves." I want to play the role of Cassius today, at least briefly. The social economy suffers in part because those within it do not sufficiently pull together. Partly this is because the field and the sector suffer from the politics of scarcity, the fact that individuals and organizations are competing for a declining pool of funds. As a result, there is a widespread tendency to ask first, and often only, how can I benefit my organization or myself? Partly, perhaps, it is because too many of us think our particular form or idea of the social economy is the most important one. We have many bishops and not enough worker priests. Perhaps it partly reflects the inherent competitive environment and fragmented bodies of knowledge characteristics of our university. There are many possibilities. Whatever the reasons, I suggest there has been and continues to be a shortage of commitments to mutualism, the idea that we seek our common good and that of others through working together in an open and sustained manner. It is, I suggest, the central value for the social economy, a far more important one, in my view, than reciprocity, without belittling what that value's inherent usefulness is. It should characterize how we work as much as how it should characterize what we seek to contribute. Or to use an old slogan from social economy circles from decades ago, each for all is as important as all for each. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. That's clearly a poetic challenge to all of us involved in the sector to find ways of working better together and moving the sector forward together. Those are two very rich presentations in very limited time frames. We were already almost 37 minutes past the hour, so there haven't been any questions I've seen come through on the chat line. So what I'll just ask one question that I had before we throw it open, and then I'll start with questions from across the country. I think the hub tries to alternate order in order for there to be balance, and this time we'll start out east. So I'll go province or perhaps by region, asking people in Atlantic Canada if there's some questions, and then move across the country. So just one reflection to start things off while people formulate their questions. Jean-Marc, I was actually impressed to learn that the first unions were developed during the time of the pyramids, you said, yes. But thinking about cultural shifts and your mention of the need for a creation of a cultural mattress around us, a transformation in the way society views ourselves and our relationships to each other and the collective tools we create to deal with our problems. And also, Ian, your view of the long and deep historical pattern of these alternative forms of governance. I wonder, how much does the success of the social economy depend on the expansion of performance measures that incorporate the triple bottom lines, both the as well as the economic performance or outcomes, the financial picture, also the environmental and the social impacts, and the extent to which we start using more complete auditing or measurement tools, will the real benefits and competitive advantage of social economy enterprises start to be seen? Do you have any thoughts on that, Jean-Marc or Ian?
Well, there's of course, social economy tries to meet or to create a kind of equilibrium between the three kind of goals. And I will say that the evaluation of the of what we do around those goals should not be too much complicated with too many indicators. For me, there's three kind of indicators that are very important. The first one is how, when you have a social enterprise and a social economy enterprise, how do you work out the solidarity question? Means the revenues, how they are distributed, the power inside the organization, how it is distributed. You see, very simple things to see. Is there a big gap between people with their salaries? Or is there a big gap between the way that the decisions are taken inside the organization? So one is this solidarity level. And it goes also outside the organization. How does the organization relate to its proximity community? What kind of a relation to the organization have with other organizations in the same area? The second one is the question of the, in French we say altérité, the le rapport à l'autre. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of relation to people that do not have the same culture. For example, social economy in Quebec is, of course, more present in what we can say the old traditional population, French Canadian, English Canadian, or immigrant for a long time. The new immigrants arrived around the 80s are less integrated inside the social economy for now. We can see that the progress is made, but we have more work to do. So the second one is, how do we relate to each other inside a social economic organization? And the third one, of course, is ecology. And for the ecology, I don't think we should work with very complicated indicators with strong measurement. The very, I will say, naive indicators will be, how do we do to have a production that is not damaging the environment? A way of producing things that are really socially useful and not how many kind of chewing gum do we have on the market now? I don't know. So we don't have to develop new kind of products that are not utile, but we have to develop products that are very useful for the community and people. And we have to think about the disposition of things inside the production. So I think evaluation is important, but we have to be careful not to go in very, very sophisticated indicators.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks. Ian, did you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I'll try to be quick. My first time I heard about the bottom line, double the bottom line then, was back in the 80s with Eldon Anderson in Saskatchewan and his work with the credit unions in particular. But I think this is a more or less contemporary way of looking at it. But from my perspective, what it tries to do is to regularize a pattern within the cooperative experience that, that has been there for a long time. And that is implicitly, at least, in the kinds of work that, that many social, other kinds of social economy organizations do. They all develop out of very powerful social contexts. Unconsciously and consciously, they contributed to the betterment of those contexts. And I can think of adult education, support for women's activities or youth programs, the kinds of things that go on in communities that enrich them in educational or cultural ways. I mean, their roles in all of these are very important, and one should not underestimate the numbers of social economy organizations that in the cultural area, for example, have developed to enrich our communities and create economic success in our communities. I'm not one who has, I'm a humanist, so I don't have a great great conviction that numbers are going to give us the truth at all times. But the kinds of auditing processes that, that go on that, to try to regularize and provide baselines and allow for incremental change, I think that's an important dimension. I think in implementing values or following principles in whatever form of social economy organization one's involved, one needs to always think incrementally and move forward each year in the directions in which you think are important and move forward seriously, not just token assignments to environmental issues, but to make a contribution to the point at which it begins to, make one a little uneasy or painful, or to involve the people you serve more in the process, to keep pushing those envelopes. I think that's part of the social economy life, actually, and of all the kinds of institutions involved in it. And when they become too structured or too reliant on institutional form to do that, I think they run the risk of actually limiting commitments. So you asked me complete auditing tools. I think it's certainly an important step, and I respect very much. There's a lot of work being done across the social economy research partnerships on this particular issue, how to measure impact, but I think in reality it's as much for the outsiders. So the case can be made to governments and people who would be interested in supporting them. The ultimate measure is the life and the vitality and the commitments of the institutions and how that's revealed and how they act on a daily basis.
Mm. Yeah, much more difficult to manage.
But that's, okay. I regret that we've fallen into a kind of simplistic way of measuring things. Anyway.
Okay, there's been a couple of questions on the chat line, but I'm sort of wary of the time, and perhaps what we'll do is we'll start open the floor up to questions from across the country, and Ushnish and Christine, when we get to your regions, if you can ask the questions directly if you'd like, or if we have time at the end, we can come back to the chat line, depending on interest from the region. So I'll invite people to unmute your phone line just before you're going to ask a question. We'll start in the Atlantic region. So if there are people in the Atlantic region that have a question, New Brunswick, PEI, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, Labrador, you can hit *6 to unmute your line and just go ahead with your question by starting with your name and location, if that's possible. So are there any questions from the Atlantic? All right, we'll keep moving across the country. If you have another idea later on, you can throw it up on the chat line or jump in once we get moving across the country. I'm not sure I heard any participants from Quebec, apart from Jean-Marc. Are there any comments or questions from Quebec?
Yvon,
yes.
Just add, the challengers, it's a comment that the importance of linking with unions.
Mm-hmm. Given their long history stretching back to the pyramids,
yes.
We should be.
Yeah, especially since, well, I could just add, especially since unions and co-ops and social economy started the 18th, 19th century as a way of resisting problems, it's we're a bit farther apart than they used to be. So I think we have to work together more.
Yeah,
and this
right.
is part of the strength of Quebec, I think.
Yes.
Ian or Jean-Marc, any reactions to that?
No, I agree totally.
I think in English-speaking Canada, there were closer associations through to about the 60s and 70s when what some people call bread-and-butter unionism became much more dominant, and the kind of trade unionism that emphasized social concerns and were active in generally in the communities as well as securing better wages and shorter hours. I think that change in the trade union movement was important. And I also think that the co-op world, for a whole bunch of reasons, it's hard to generalize that because I think it varies a little bit across the country, was less solicitous of trade union support. But the linkages were quite strong up until the 60s and 70s.
Definitely. I think part of the preparation for the summit is to help build some of those, strengthen some of those connections as well. So
yeah.
I agree. All right. Thanks, Yvonne. Any other questions from Quebec? And we'll keep moving then to Ontario. If there are any participants from Ontario that have a question, you can unmute your line using star 6 and then identify your name, location.
Hi there.
Mm.
Oh.
Go ahead.
My question is a follow-up to Yvonne, so maybe I could go ahead then. My name is Emmanuel, and I'm in Guelph. And my question is similar to Yvonne's point about linking with the union, but I'm wondering if someone could comment on how they think that the history of the social economy has been changing in the past couple decades with the advent of the sustainable development movements, like especially all the conferences that happened recently with climate change. Is that something that you see having a lasting impact on the social economy?
Very good question. Ian Jean-Marc?
Thank you, Jean-Marc.
If the climate change conference or debate is has an influence on social economy, is that the question?
And the link to the whole sustainable development movement, I think.
Okay, the link. Well, if we look at the very difficult to talk from a national point of view, but from a Quebec point of view, at the last summit we had in Quebec, Summit on Social Economy, the question of the environment was brought up on stage. Of course, it's a very difficult and tough one, but I think all the reflection, all the movements that is going on in the world and in Quebec around that question are making pressure on social economy to adapt that dimension inside the organization. But I will say that it's very slow movement. It's not very easy to have a real profound move. What we do have is more superficial integration of ecology or development durable question, for example, recycling papers, to have transport collective, collective transportation, reducing the energy consumption inside the organization, but to try to have new way to produce things, to have new ways to be able to have a less impact on the environment. We are not yet at this point of the debate inside the social economy organization. So there's a lot of research to do, a lot of thinking to do inside the movement to be able to really show a good performance on the side of the environment question.
Thanks so much. Ian?
I'm going to respond largely thinking about cooperatives because that's where I do most of my work, but I think what I have to say applies outside within the social economy too. I think for some older organizations that are embedded in the practices of the past, this is a real challenge. But I have to say that there are several of the older organizations that have done, have made genuine efforts and have moved quite substantially in the area of environment and in the area of dealing with energy issues. I point to the emergence of energy co-ops and other forms of social economy organizations that are into that kind of thing. There's some really interesting examples in Ontario, for example. And I think beyond that, when you look at where the new waves are and the characteristic of the social economy and the co-op world too, is that there are always these new waves, and some of them do well and prosper, some well on the shore. And I think this is one that is doing that, because it is of such great importance to young people in particular, but not just young people. And so you see a lot of energy in being in new co-ops, the challenge and new kinds of organizations to deal with that. The challenge I think we have is how do we create an environment in which they will be able to thrive. I think, for example, around this where I'm sitting here, there are about 20 organizations, some co-ops, some not, that are involved in slow food production. But how do they get to that next level where they can create a certain amount of stability for themselves and the kinds of businesses they want to do? I mean, the history of organic foods in the United States and Canada offers them both positive and negative parallels that need to be thought about. But I think this is of all the issues I see, I don't teach anymore, but of all the issues that I see that mobilize young people, this is the one that has the greatest impact. So I think it has a lot of legs, and I guess one has to ask at the end anyway, what choice do we have? I see the potential here. It's very, very important. If you look at these research partnerships, the research that is being done all the way from one coast to the other and into the north, you'll see environmental issues and organic food issues. That's very common. And I want to stress that comes from two places. It comes from universities in part, but it also comes from the community partners who are involved closely or not so closely with this whole enterprise. And it's kind of like being, I have the feeling it must have been somewhat similar when consumer co-ops started to emerge a long time ago, when you have this kind of widespread understanding that we have a problem and here are some solutions, let's get to work on them.
Uh-huh. Great, thanks Ian. We had another question from Ontario, and then I wanted to give the opportunity for the North and the West to ask questions too. So with a few minutes we have left, if we can try to be as concise as possible from the questions and the answers, that would be appreciated. The other questioner from Ontario?
Yeah, it's David Welsh here. Hello there. It's just a quick technical question. Your presentations, Ian's and the others, and your articles and all, where do we get all that stuff?
They're available on the Social Economy Hub website for this telelearning session. So I think Ashley included the link in the email she sent out confirming the dial-in information for the call, and I'm not sure if we're going to be sending another email afterwards.
Okay.
No, and they're all available on the Social Economy website, so it's www.socialeconomyhub.ca, and there's a page for telelearning sessions, and they're all under session number 19.
Okay, because I did my registration by phone with you, Ashley, a little while ago.
Okay.
So that's why I didn't know about that. Okay. So I just go on the telecommunications or tele whatever it is.
Telelearning, yep. Link on the Hub website, and you should be able to find the page for today's session.
Good, thanks.
Thanks, David. So if we move along then for give the North a chance quickly, if Valerie or anyone else in the territories, any of our three territories wanted to ask a question. If not, then we'll open it up to the West, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and BC. If there's anyone who wanted to get in a question before we wrap it up.
I had a quick question. My name's Ashley, and I'm currently in BC. I just was wondering if Ian, if you could speak really quickly too. I know you sort of addressed more broadly the issue of sustainability and incorporating that into social economic institutions within the unions, but I was wondering if you could address more specifically forestry practices and the sort of, maybe even if you could just cite a few examples of social economic institutions that are sort of based around improved forestry practices and still, you know, kind of making a viable go at it. I don't know if that's sort of your area of expertise or not, but...
Well, it isn't particularly, but there are some forestry cooperatives, and Harriet Proctor is the most best known, perhaps. I'm not quite sure whether it is still on the website, but it used to be on the old BC Institute for Cooperative Studies website, along with a couple of others.
Okay.
Okay. And also in the old BCICS, publications. There were three publications that dealt with forestry co-ops. I mean, it tended to have a British Columbia slant, of course,
mm-hmm.
where we are. But it did refer to others because there are forestry co-ops around the world. Japan has a very interesting experience with them, there are other Asian countries as well, and Scandinavian countries, Norway. It's a much bigger kind of approach that they have, as opposed to the smaller scale selective logging efforts to create local business. I'm getting long-winded, the forestry cooperative world is quite substantial. And if you go to the ICA, you'll find guides to some of them. And for us, because of our legal structures, they're almost fallout co-ops, wherever there's a little bit of space that groups of people can come together and harvest the forest in a community-based way. There aren't that many opportunities because of the nature of our holdings, and also developing the value-added dimensions of forestry co-ops is not always easy. But it depends upon location and markets, whether you're going to make furniture or whatever. It was a very interesting woodworkers co-op, by the way, which is linked to forestry, careful forestry practice, located in Vancouver. Sorry, I'm not more helpful.
That's great. I wonder also if we had someone from the Nordic Institute. I think there's a lot of work going on in forestry in Northern Ontario as well, and there might be some interesting models or examples to learn from there. But
it's David from Nordic here. We don't really have that many examples here at Nordic, but I know at Lakehead University, there's quite the contingent there who are working on those issues around forestry and social economy.
Very interesting experience in Quebec, although it is focused on dimensions, limited dimensions. I understand that Jean-Marc would know much more than I, but it should also, if you want to get a complete Canadian picture, you should certainly look at that too.
That's very interesting. Thank you. That's what my thesis is on, is looking at the cooperatives versus the sort of societies and the different how the different mm-hmm. institutional structures play out in terms of viability for those companies. So.
Yeah. That's great.
We're John Cornish here in Ottawa. Just to plug into that, Hazel Corcoran at the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation will give you materials on the Chantier Forestier in Quebec. That's the forestry workers cooperatives in Quebec.
Could you just repeat that name, sorry?
Yes, Hazel Corcoran at the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation. And just go and ask Hazel about forestry in Quebec. I know time has gone past, and this is a voice, John Cornish from Ottawa in Ontario. I'll have to put most of what I want to say in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
But the key thing from the British perspective is the whole matter of public education. And Laurie Mook and Jack Quarter at OISE at one of the social economy events there, which you can look at online, pointed to the way in which the cooperative movement has been written out of the high school textbooks.
I've
actually done it, count it line by line. And I will try and be at this event in Ottawa in the springtime. It's the first time I've heard about it. But the theme for me will definitely be getting the news out and speaking to progressive business that should be in the social economy rather than in the capitalist economy. So that will be an innovation and rescue theme.
Great. Ian, could I just interject that the Hub is going to be publishing something shortly, the leadership of Annie McKittrick and others, on the education program across Canada and what the situation is with regard to the social economy, including cooperatives. Suffice it to say, it's not a happy novel.
Huh. And folding that back, Ian, Gerard Perron in Quebec and the co-op group in Manchester have been working on this whole idea of annual cooperative audits to bring forward the good news that can then be shared into community venues like school textbooks and the school curriculum. So the use of that values and principles statement from the International Cooperative Alliance actually it becomes a living document rather than simply a passive statement.
Great, that's very encouraging. So, thanks, John, for that addition and information. As Ashley has said on the chat room, that we'll continue to participate there. There are a couple of questions there from Ishnish and Christine that weren't able to get to, and I have some responses for. And Jean-Marc has just posted more information on forestry work there. So, I would invite anyone who has questions they weren't able to raise during the call to post them there, and we'll continue the discussion. Also, if you want to share or re-listen to the very rich presentations we heard from Jean-Marc and Ian, the MP3 file of this session, as well as the MP3 files from past telelearnings, are going to be posted on the Hub website, so you can download and listen to those. And with that, I'd like to just put in a last plug once again for the National Summit that Ian and Jean-Marc mentioned, coming up May 30th to June 1st in Ottawa, that brings together many of the key players and tries to reach out to some of the unusual suspects that have shared values and aspirations related to the kind of movement we're trying to build in the cooperative movement, the community economic development, social economy sector. So we're hoping that this will be an event that will move the benchmarks, move the goalposts in terms of the development of the sector in Canada. So for more information on that, I'll post it to the chat room, or you can visit the Canadian CED Network's website. And that acronym is unpronounceable, so thanks, Ian. Thank you very much to everyone for your participation, especially to Jean-Marc and Ian for the rich presentations today, and watch your newsletters for the next telelearning session, which Ashley will be promoting in due time. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.